Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'll let y'all go ahead. Sure, just sit right there, that's fine. And I'll help. You have some handouts, I'll be happy to pass those out. And again, two representatives here.
I think we'll sit in that, right?
That's fine, that'd probably be enough there.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
And so this is discussion and possible action on authorization to negotiate retirement plan advisory services contract. And John Hawes will preside.
I'll just introduce our two guests here and let them introduce themselves. They're with Holbein Associates, one of our proposers.
Thank you. I'm Richard Holbein, president and founder of Holbein Associates. And this is Harlow Tripp, a consultant with the firm. And we're pleased to be here and very happy, quite frankly, that we were invited. And hopefully, at the end of our discussion, you decide that you'd like to work with us, because we'd certainly love to work with you. If I could get you to open the presentation to section one, I'll give you a little bit of background. I'm sure you read through the RFP, so you probably already know all of this, but we've been in the investment consulting business since early 1986, January of 86. And prior to that, I spent a dozen years on the plan sponsor side, much as or John is doing, or whatever. I was in the corporate offices of both Martin Marietta Corporation and finally with Continental Airlines in the Treasury Department, and had pension assets as part of my responsibilities. We have at Holbein Associates 13 clients, which spread over a vast array, if you will, of assets. We have a very, very large client, which brings our total to up over $15 billion. And then we have a very, very small client that we work with in the local Dallas area also. We're full service. We deal in all of the areas of what we call asset planning. We work with investment policies, trying to establish a rational policy for the investment of assets, asset allocation, manager search, performance measurement, and evaluation of that measurement, which goes more into the total plan type of scenario. And we do research services for some of our clients. And I think one of the things that sets us apart from many of the consultants out there are that we have no conflicts in working with you and the assets of your plans. We have no financial relationships with any money managers. We don't manage money of any sort. And in fact, we have no financial relationships with anyone who would be providing services to you either. On page two, it's kind of a diagram of what we do. And it starts with the investment policy. Most clients we have had an investment policy when we started to work with them. Some of them didn't have an investment policy. So the thing to do is sit down and figure out what it is you're trying to do and where you're trying to go with the assets of the plan. And part of that investment policy involves asset allocation and what various asset classes are appropriate for investing your assets. Some plans will invest in things that other plans will not invest in. Some plans are much more fully funded than other plans, so there are different risk parameters which enter into the picture and which enter into the overall scenario as to what types of assets you would be investing in and how much of those assets you may be investing in. And the other thing is that once you've established your asset allocation is to look for investment managers for those different asset classes. Now understand, I believe that you have one investment manager which basically has a balanced portfolio of domestic stocks and bonds. And that's part of the asset allocation too, if in fact you want to just have domestic stocks and bonds. You can look at the bond area, do I want to further diversify that into some different asset classes? And also within the stock area itself on the domestic side, do I want large and small or just large? Do I want value and growth or just value? So you've got other types of things that can go on in subsets of that asset allocation. And then select the managers that are best suited, if you will, for your situation to manage those that portfolio of assets. And the final stage is to put together a performance evaluation monitoring package for the managers and the total plan to see that the goals that were established in the investment policy are being achieved. It's kind of a fine-tuning point at that point. And as things move through the cycles, we're trying to adjust things so that we have the best probability of achieving our overall investment goals over time. Just a few words on investment policy. When you're determining what asset classes you want to be invested in and how much is going to go into those different asset classes, that's where working with a consultant is extraordinarily important, because there have been a number of studies, and the most widely acclaimed of which is the Brinson-Biebauer study, which says that about 90% of the expected return you're going to get out of what your plan is going to do is going to come from the asset classes you're exposed to. Not necessarily the stocks within there, or the bonds within there, or the managers, how well the managers may or may not do within their asset classes. But most of it's going to come from what you actually decided you wanted to do with the assets. Large stocks, small stocks, mid-cap stocks, growth, value, private equity, mezzanine finance, whatever it happens to be, those are going to be the major drivers of return, and that's where the interaction with the consultant is extraordinarily important. The other thing to look at in the investment policy is to make sure that you're achieving adequate diversification and to spell that out within the policy. And a statement of goals toward achieving the actuarial rate of return. I mean, that's the underlying thing we're trying out. That's the big hurdle rate, so to speak. It's that actuarial rate of return plus a little bit of a buffer to make sure that you can pay other expenses that are going to come along with the plan that may not be included within what the actuary is trying to determine for those overall assets. It will also establish clear risk parameters, how much volatility is going to be involved because of the types of asset classes you're going into, and sets forth clear and specific, if you will, and attainable objectives for the investment managers. If you got one, you can spell out the objective you want him to beat. If you want his bonds to beat the aggregate, you want his stocks to beat the S&P or maybe to beat the Russell 1000, then those types of things can be spelled out in the investment policy. And there's also sometimes relative goals in those investment policies. That is, if you're going to hire somebody, you want to make sure not only that he beats the index, but that he does well compared to other managers that are managing similar types of portfolios. So you can say, we would like for you to rank in the top 50% of this universe of investment advisors, etc. And it sets forth references to guidelines the managers are to follow. What I mean by guidelines are the things that they can and can't do. Can't short stocks. Can't buy stocks below a certain level. Can't buy bonds that are CCC rated or those types of things. So that he knows what his parameters are in which he has to run that portfolio. We said earlier the major determinant, if you will, of the overall return to the portfolio or to the fund is going to be determined by asset allocation. Back when I first went on the, actually right out of graduate school, pretty much, at Martin Marietta Corporation, I was the only person in the Treasury Department that had access to a computer. Now, look around the table. I mean, and it was cards. It was Fortran, punch cards, computer. I ran the rolling quarterly forecast for the corporation, and because I had access to the computer, I inherited the evaluation of the money managers for the pension plan and the asset allocation function for the pension plan. Now, I didn't rank really high from the standpoint of being able to garner the use of the computer at any time I wanted. So I was usually, this was in Washington, D.C., I was usually in a car going to Baltimore, Maryland at 2 o'clock in the morning to get 2 hours on this computer. And I came back one day and said, hey, guys, give me 2 weeks. Have somebody take away all of my other functions for 2 weeks, and I'll transfer all of this type of stuff to timesharing. It'll get you your reports much quicker from the standpoint of performance evaluation. It will get you your asset allocation decisions that need to be made at certain time, you know, every year within 20 to 30 minutes. And that if you want to make some changes, we can do that. We don't have to wait for the next weekend to go to Baltimore, Maryland to get time on the overall computer. So I developed, if you will, a real insight into what's going on behind the numbers of all of these types of things that people are talking about when they show you a page similar to this. I've developed asset allocation, the models based on Monte Carlo simulation. So I know a little bit about what's going into all of this. The thing that we have right now is that we buy asset allocation from Frontier Analytics, a division of SunGard. And as long as they're maintaining state-of-the-art asset allocation software, I'm happy about that. But the thing is, I know what's going on and can move the numbers and put the information in there, which gives us really a look at overall risk-return parameters from the various asset classes. Not all of these asset classes may be appropriate to do. It's not here saying, hey, these are the ones that we're absolutely recommending, but these are the ones that quite frankly have a variance from the standpoint of adding a little bit of volatility reduction when you put them together. And so when we look at this and decide, okay, let's further explore what may be going into some of these asset classes, we can come out with a return that we're going to expect over a long period of time and a risk associated with that return and the variance of that return we can expect over a short period of time. Now, we've all been exposed to something this year that none of these models can take into account. These models are based on 20-year projections and one-year variance in returns. And those one-year variance in returns come out of the overall correlation of different asset classes to each other. This year, in a six-month period, it made no difference what you were really invested in and it had exposure to anything other than treasury bonds. It really, really made no difference. And if you go in and you try and look at that on a statistical basis, it's greater than a period exceeding 400 years that should ever happen. It's one of those things that no matter what you plan for, it just somehow or other, every now and then, Murphy sticks his little ugly head up, and there it is. Now, the thing to be cognizant of, and I put a letter in here that I sent to clients in October. You can look through that later. But the thing is, don't throw in the towel. Because, quite frankly, if you decided that you wanted exposure to certain asset classes over long periods of time because of the way in which they interacted together, I don't think that model is broken. We're going to come off the bottom. If we don't come off the bottom, then we're all going to be looking at something different than the type of capitalistic system we're currently in. And if debt all of a sudden is going to pay more than equity, then who's going to be an owner of the equity side of the business? That is, you know, and so there's a big dislocation that would have to occur if we're not going to come off the bottom of this. But no matter how hard we plan, sometimes everything doesn't work. But at the end of the day, in a normal cycle, the interaction and variance of those different asset classes and rebalancing to that overall goal will add value to the overall plan. The other thing we, you know, spend a lot of time on is trying to find really good managers for those various portfolios that come out of the asset allocation. And
yeah, I've never personally used a punch card, but on my day-to-day basis, I don't know if I've seen them. But one of my day-to-day responsibilities is being a point of contact for investment managers. What we do is meet regularly, daily basis with investment managers. That's not to say that we limit ourselves to who we have met with. We don't maintain a roster or an approved list of investment managers. So once an allocation has been approved, we use third-party database to go out and search for best-in-class investment managers that fill your allocation. We do meet with many, and we do have good relationships with many, but every search that we do is ground up. We don't get paid, we don't charge to be part of an investment roster, we don't have an approved list. Everything is ground up and customized per client. When we do meet with investment managers and when we are selecting, we select on the basis of both qualitative and quantitative factors. We're evaluating that they adhere to the investment style that they're being hired for, and that's part and parcel with monitoring and monitoring performance and investment style after they are selected as well. We do meet with many people and get comfortable with the process. Important on this page, as important as the buy decision is and process with that investment manager, we're also very concerned with their sell discipline, and that leads into over the last time frame here, and what we really look for going forward is downside protection. So anyone can fill out an allocation with the index. If we're going to select active investment managers, what we are primarily concerned with is downside capture. So in periods of down markets that managers outperform on the downside and protect assets in down markets, so there's less rebound needed to recover on the way back up. Still been a difficult year for active management. This year has been an outsized difficult time for active management, but going forward that is what we select on the basis of and hoping to protect assets with the investment managers selected.
I mean, if you think about it, if a manager goes down 33%, he's got to go up 50% to get back where he was. That's a tough nut.
So we may always not be looking for the hot dog, whoever has been the highest performer over the last few years or 1 year, but we are looking for longer term outperformance in down markets. And the databases that we do use for manager selection, rather than maintaining internal rosters or models, we do pay for the external databases. PSN Informa and eVestment Alliance are the two major players in this category. We employ Informa PSN, which represents 2,000 investment managers and approximately 11,000 products distributed across those 2,000 managers.
A little insight on that, and PSN was originated in 1982 by Barry Efron, who was at Martin Marietta Corporation when I was at Martin Marietta Corporation, and Barry left Martin Marietta to start a time-sharing service, and then he got together with a fellow by the name of Paul Berg, and they decided that things that I was asking for from the standpoint of manager evaluation, that maybe they ought to just maintain a manager database. So they established Plan Sponsor Network, which is now called PSN Enterprise. And I was one of the original board of directors for Plan Sponsor Network when I was at Continental Airlines in 1982. And so that's grown now to where it's one of the recognized, if you will, national databases.
A couple other products that we pay for, hedgefund.net. We have selected hedge funds in the past and done due diligence for hedge funds. We'll say that they have been sparsely utilized with our clients, and we have not had real pain with our clients from the recent debacles with hedge funds and deleveraging in the system. Has not been a large exposure for our clients. In the mutual fund arena, we use Morningstar Principia, Morningstar being the standout leader for mutual fund information and a huge database. I'm sure many of you use Morningstar in some form.
And we also use Lipper through the PSN database.
Excuse me for interrupting. If y'all can sort of move on forward.
Okay. Well, just real quick. Sorry about that. We'll just go real quick. Well, anyway, the ICC universe that we use for comparative data for your plan assets. Now, this is what we look at from the standpoint of how well did your managers do to other actively managed portfolios, how well did your plan do vis-a-vis other plans. And the major reason for looking at how well your plan did, and we've set up goals and objectives in that investment policy we're trying to achieve, is if we look at how other plans are doing, it may bring a light bulb on that says somebody's doing something a little bit different. Let's find out what it is that they may be doing or exposed to that we're not doing that may help us out in raising our overall position relative to what other plans are doing. This database is the largest consultant access database in the nation. It started with a group of us back in 1986 and was originally known as Wilshire Cooperative Universe Service. In 1992, we left Wilshire, went over to State Street, well, Bankers Trust, which was acquired by State Street. And set up what was then known as the Investment Consultants Cooperative. There are 16 consulting firms around the nation contributing plan assets to this database. No one knows whose plan is what because they're all coded by numbers, but we do know how things rank within those different returns generated by the managers and the plans. It's used by the Federal Reserve because of its diversity. I mean, it just covers the nation instead of being local to some particular area or bank. There's $1.5 trillion in the data in the universe. Was over $2 trillion at the beginning of the year, and it's almost 22,000 manager portfolios. And over 1,100 funds. So it's a very, very diverse database, and we can look at performance vis-a-vis all kinds of different ways from what may be happening with your plan. And from the standpoint of earlier talking about the fact that we're independent, don't have any conflicts or whatever, the GAO did a study and found that on average, consultants without any type of tie to other organizations actually produced returns in the area of 1.4% higher over long periods of time than those who did have conflicts working within a large organization that had maybe a broker-dealer in it, maybe some investment advisors in it, maybe some custody or bank relationships in it or whatever. We don't and will not accept outside payments in any form. All of our compensation comes from our clients. We've been very, very good at moving clients into different asset classes. On page 9 shows some of the things over time that we've been involved in diversifying client assets. And most recently here, you know, we tried, we looked at moving and rebalancing REIT exposure back in 2004, which we did, and then new clients came on board, and we said, yeah, it looked like you might want to be in REITs, but we're not doing it right now. So we held them off, and so this last fall started moving exposure back into REITs. Short term, it's going to be kind of, you know, volatile, just like everything else, but long term, once it comes back to its normal position, there's going to be a lot of additional value added to those plans. We talked about the fact that the ICC is the largest database, and we're using that to try and increase, if you will, this whole thing can be summarized into one quick, easy sentence. We're trying to increase the probability of success for your plan. We do things on a custom basis. We customize all of our reports that come to our clients for what they need to be able to do their job. I came off your side of the table, and it just used to infuriate me when somebody come in and say, hey, here's what XYZ is doing, and this is what you ought to be doing. I say, you don't know my problems, what I need to be doing. So if you're not going to sit down and talk with me about what I'm trying to achieve and deliver something that helps me do what I want to do, that isn't going to work. So when I started this consulting firm, that was the first thing I wanted to make sure was that everything was customized to the needs of that particular client. And that having been said, we're never going to be a large organization because to deliver a customized product is very, very difficult, and that means you got to stay involved. We do things by way in that customization from standpoint of delivering monthly reports as well as quarterly reports. And summary, you know, I have, Jiminy Crickets now, thinking about things, 3 years of consulting in a dozen years, so 30 some odd years, if you will, of investment experience from the standpoint of institutional assets. And we're very responsive and timely. I got the minutes from a client just the other day and from their last meeting. Well, the last meeting, unfortunately, because of problems with the weather and airlines and all of that stuff, I was in an airplane when they were having a meeting. I got the minutes of the meeting, and I was pleasantly surprised that it went in there. It said that the committee voted to renew contract and extend the contract with Holbein Associates because of their responsiveness and non, if you will, biased opinions and things that have brought value to this system. Damn, I wasn't even there to make the pitch. So anyway, there's a little bit of information on me. I guess the only thing that's left out of that is I spent some time in the United States Marine Corps. There are some things here on diversifying investments. Some of the things that we've been trying to do, and I think that one of the things that really comes from the consultant side is rather than just trying to be like everybody else, is that for you to succeed and for you to get ahead, we have to be ahead in trying to find different things that are going to help you out. And so we've done that over the years with our clients by looking at the things in which we did on a diversification basis for some, not all. Not all of them got all of them. Some of them didn't get any of them from a standpoint of going things into private equity, into real estate, into REITs, into MLPs. And so if there are any questions on any of that type of stuff, I would love to respond to it. Right now, we find a huge value in convertible bonds, which is probably going to lead the pack up. Because just as soon as things start to turn, the equity side of that's going to kick in, number one. And number two, as the spread to treasuries on regular corporate debt comes in, convertible bonds are going to participate even more violently on the upside. information on REITs and some information on master limited partnerships, a little bit on private equity. And one of the major things to think about in the way of private equity is a reason it works is that when these funds are taken private, they actually do better than those which are in the public sphere because they have a guardian watching over them. Instead of being tied to quarterly results, they're tied to longer term results, and they tend to be actually better companies. So when they're brought public again, premiums are paid for. The letter to behind tab two is a letter I sent out to friends and clients in October. I have some samples I can go through behind that if you'd like for me to even address any of the various reports.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, there are samples, but you can customize to whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And there's also a sample in here. I know this is a defined benefit, but the last few pages in there's a sample on a defined contribution setup. So we do defined contribution as well as defined benefit work.
I'd like to, if the staff board members or any of the other board members had questions. John, do you have any questions?
I had one question. Richard, given the size of our plan, which is in the roughly the $20 million asset range and stuff, and I know you hadn't looked in a lot of details, our actuarial required rate of return that we currently use is 7.5%. Do you see that is that a reasonable rate of return that you see, or is that
from this point? It absolutely is. We're at a low point now in the markets, and quite frankly, the going forward expectations should be significantly higher than they were 10 years ago. So I believe that is definitely an achievable rate of return from this point.
Okay. We're certainly have, obviously, like a lot of plans, have concerns because of the big downslide, that it puts everybody behind and dug a pretty big hole that they're going to dig themselves out of, and be trying to be sort of realistic about what is
right.
The right amount of return to expect, and therefore have your actuary base, you know, contribution
right
amounts on and things like that. Do you see that as being
I see that it is definitely achievable. If you notice some of the things I put into the various asset allocation things that were on the couple of pages earlier, most of those diversifying asset things that I put in there have significant income components. So I'm a big believer in income from the standpoint of plan rebalancing and from the standpoint of reinvesting. Capital gains, if you will, that are not realized, just flop right along, but income has to be reinvested, and normally, because of the way in which it runs through a cycle, you're actually buying more units as that income comes in during the downside time frame, which increases your overall ultimate return.
Do you have thoughts on correlation versus non-correlation? Do you recommend that? I mean, we're discussing those.
Well, that's what I was, led up to earlier. You know, this last 6 months, everything's been totally correlated. But that's atypical, and I don't see that as what's going to be.
Well, unless you cover CTAs and managed futures, and that's been non-correlated.
Yeah, non-correlated. Those have been non-correlated. Private equity has been non-correlated. Mezzanine finance has been non-correlated. REITs have had fairly low correlations. MLPs have low correlations and very high income. And it's infrastructure REITs. I mean infrastructure MLPs we're talking about, which are, you know, basically storage and distribution facilities for energy. And that's not going away. And that's like the toll booths out here. That's exactly what it is. It's just a toll booth sitting on a pipeline. It just keeps chunking out the change. So there are things that I think, from the standpoint of non-correlation, that will come into effect, if you will, on a going-forward basis, but didn't really protect us in the last 9 months.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Mr. Levine and Mr. Tripp, thank you.
And just in closing, I would love to get the opportunity to work with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I thought we had another one.
12:30.